Welcome back to the TNT Wheel of Time coverage here on the Nullify Take channel. I'm your host, Chris, and with me is someone that our chat would like to formally call the Wheel of Time. Will, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you very much. Flattered.
I think everybody was impressed by your knowledge coming into the last podcast. Like I told you before, I felt like a novice that have not gone through the arches yet last week when we did our podcast.
Well, there's been lots of arches this week, that's good. And I'm pleased. I sort of watched back myself and felt a bit patchy on a few things, and we'll get there. We'll keep trucking on.
Yeah. Well, we had some great new listeners to the show. People that have left comments and things like that as well. Some book readers who weren't too happy about some of the changes being made, and then others that are, I think, okay, and they understand that some changes have to be made. But Andrew Lee here says the so-called Wheel of Time fans review bombing the series are moronic idiots. With three capitals or three exclamation marks or four, says to the fans of the TV series, please help rate the Wheel of Time so that it does well. Well, I will say from a viewer ratingship standpoint, well, I looked at it beforehand. It's been number one in Australia and New Zealand and a lot of other countries for the whole last week. So at least it's getting the viewership numbers. And that's really what's going to matter if it comes to getting another show, because even if the book people don't like it, they give it a low rating online. It's really going to come down to, are people actually tuning in for it?
Yeah, 100%. And I think as the production continues to roll on, I think there'll be more and more things that the readers will be able to appreciate as well. And also, Dolores, thank you. I'm pleased you were able to learn so much from our video last week.
It's back as well. Welcome back from the States. Yeah. We just had Lena on the previous podcast as well. I appreciate actually all three of you for jumping in back-to-back podcasts this morning as well. And I just wanted to bring up, Andre, thank you so much for the $10 as well. We really, really appreciate it. We'll go straight back into the channel to continue to improve the quality of the show here. And he says, Tayshar, Chris, and Tayshar Wool. I'm not going to pretend like I knew what that meant, but it means Lord of Glory, I believe, Wool?
Yes, something along those lines. My old tongue's a bit... rusty.
I'm disappointed. We all expect you to be talking in the old tongue here today in the recap, do the whole recap in the old tongue.
Look, I'm still working on my Te Reo Māori, to be fair. I went on a course yesterday for a day, so one language at a time, thank you very much.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So let's get into the episodes. We're going to do it a little bit differently this week. We're going to have it a lot more free-flowing. I want to focus on character arcs throughout the two episodes, more so than going in it and talking about each scene and the way that it happened on the show. And then everybody in the live, feel free to also, from your end, ask questions and take part in the conversation as well. Andre says buy chocolate milk for Maki. Maki doesn't need any more chocolate milk, Andre. He's got way too much of that. He's my co-host for Traitors, and he has a slight addiction. I don't know how his stomach takes all the chalky milk, but I'm not going to add to that obsession. I'm just going to say that. But we're going to talk about different characters, and I think starting off here with episode three, coming into it, well, the person who really ended up getting, I think, the biggest, and it feels like it's her show at this stage, is Nynaeve, right? She's been all over the shop. And we start off the episode with her where we ended up on episode two, and she has to go and do the trial, go through the arches. And that's kind of the first scene that we get here. What did you think of this scene? Do you feel like, is this following the book? Is there anything that you can let us in on from your observations leading into the arches and the way that they become Aes Sedai?
Yeah, there's a few things that were different. First of all, for me, I felt the archers weren't as ornate as they could be. They seemed quite brutal, and for me, they just didn't have the look that I imagined. And I think maybe some of the readers may have been much the same. We got a glimpse of what the old time used to be like in the previous season, with flying cars and sort of like that high tech with that sort of mixed with that low tech. And for me, the archers just didn't sing to me as I thought they would. They just seemed a bit stoic, bit big, bit rough. Another thing, I think, if I could remember rightly, and someone in the chat could probably help me, is you go into it naked. And I felt that was, they didn't do that in this. And I think if it was Game of Thrones, they would have had the clothes off as quick as they could have, which is showing that they're not trying to match the Game of Thrones energy with that sort of content. They're sort of treating it a bit more with care, I suppose. But yeah, I think if I can remember rightly, that's
Do you think that it's because they're trying to appeal to a wider audience? Like, for instance, this way kids can watch the show as well. They clearly, this is a massive show that could last for many seasons, right? So if you're a kid of 12 years old now, you could potentially be 22 when the show ends. Like, it's easily going to be probably a decade if they do the thing justice.
Yes. I mean, granted, they've definitely gone Game of Thrones-esque with a few of the, as Andre says, deaths and the way some of the murders are done, but they are keeping the nudity content down.
And listen, as someone who loves a little bit of nudity content, maybe, you know, like the Game of Thrones, you know, I think scenes for me was quite interesting and it definitely captured you in the beginning, but they also did phase that out later on in the show. Like, I didn't feel like it was the main thing because as some of those actresses became more famous, they didn't necessarily want to do that the whole time, and they wanted to be known for the acting, not for the nudity part of it, which is fair, 100%. You know, at the end of the day. 100%. And I don't mind it. Like, it's not...
No, I don't think it would have made any difference to the show. Like, they didn't need to do it. It's just a change from the text, and it's different when you're reading the text. It's not like they're going into graphic detail about it. It's just they strip off and they go into the archers. The archers themselves, the trials were different for Nynaeve, especially the last one. We have the three trials. The first one, she meets her dad, and as a child in that, essentially. And
the attention to detail, by the way, was great. Like, for instance, she goes back into this and she's got short hair, not her normal long braided hair. I noticed that when she looks into the water, she sees herself as a kid. So clearly showing that she is a kid, even though we see her as grown up Nynaeve being there as well. And that was really interesting seeing the attention to detail.
In the Two Rivers and that side of Andor, girls don't braid the hair until they are deemed by the woman's circle to be an adult. So up until that point, they keep the hair out, and it's too very much, it's very much just a sign of adulthood to have your hair braided. And there's often comments by Nynaeve to like Siv Egwene, you know, your hair should be braided as she's an adult with her hair out. But Nynaeve,
I thought it was like to give a sign to the local men not to hit on them before they've got braided hair.
possibly. It's probably a combination of both, but it was very much just a sign of adulthood, essentially, for the females. So that was a nice nod to she's a girl. And that sort of, for readers, they would have picked up on that too.
But it's a brutal experience for her in there, right? Because she's in this house with her mom and dad. She's living there. People come to attack them. There are archers coming in. And she is being stowed away at the bottom of the house. And she has to make a decision to either go up there and try and save her parents, or the way out will only show but once. She has to leave through the archers again, leaving them behind. Coming in on the other side, she's got physical injuries that actually follows her into the physical world outside of the archers, which was really interesting.
Yeah, and the Shirium, the Aes Sedai at the other end, talks about that. Says some girls will come out, you know, with a stab wound, and others will be in there completely cut to bits and come out perfectly fine. And that's to do, they talk about, I know, apologies if I butcher it, the Dreamworld Tel Alanroid, I'm probably butchered that, apologies team, and that is very much a dream world that people with the One Power and with certain abilities can go into.
Is this like virtual reality, almost before virtual reality, with a little bit of a twist, right? Because what's that, Player One? That kind of gave me Player One vibes, you know, going into this different virtual world, but then they're actually physically getting injured.
Yes, and that's kind of how the dream world works too. And if you can sort of touch upon other people's dreams, but the archers in this sort of feel like that's what they've gone into. And there's even a symbol of the dream world on the water urn that the Aes Sedai used to tip over Nynaeve as she comes out to wash her clean of sins and and everything that happens in there. And it's interesting that that first trial is then mirrored in a way in the final trial, with them stowing Lan and
Nynaeve's
daughter into the basement, whereas it's sort of mirrored in a way. And that was a really interesting scene, and quite a bit different from the books also. In the books, they have the final test is Nynaeve and Lan being in Malkia, and which is Lan's country that was swallowed up by the Blight. And so basically in her third test, she's in Malkia and she's the queen of Malkia with Lan being the king. And if I can remember rightly, there is a baby in a buggy and a troll and a pram as well that she, or a bassinet that she leaves behind. So it's still leaving Lan and a child, but it's interesting what happened and how she got left in the archers for a long
budget, maybe, but budget reasons to create that world, create all of the things that would have had to go with a scene like that. Probably a lot would have been required, either CGI wise or just putting that together, and maybe they decided
also a lot
to,
of explanation as well. A lot of explanation too, like they still haven't really gone into depth about Malkier. They had the and Lan's history, and they would have had to try and retcon that in a way, whereas we all know the Two Rivers. She visits the Two Rivers in both of her other arch trips. And then you've still got likes of your Perrin and your Matt as well. So it's definitely links there. And it makes sense.
Andrew Lee's got a question for you there, Will. He says, Chris and Will, will you be able to survive the archers test? Well, the archers are supposed to show you your fears, your weaknesses, right? So I don't know, man. Like I've got a real phobia of snakes. So I feel like snakes would be a big part of my archer's trial. And I don't know if moving to Australia was the smartest thing to do since I don't like snakes, but I feel like this is part of me. This is my archer's trial, moving to Australia, taking my fears head on. I haven't seen any snakes in the Melbourne CBD yet. But then again, I'm not back in the corporate world yet. I'm sure I'll come across them.
I think for me, it would be very much based around my family. So I think it would be a tough one. It'd be pretty brutal. And I can imagine it.
Well, did you have to go and win again? You know, you're winning at this, man. Like, Chris is afraid of snakes and Will's afraid of letting his family down. Like, clearly you've got the better fear. Dolores is saying, I'm not taking that test. Text green, game over. All right, so the second scene is one where she returns to the Two Rivers, and she comes across a lady there that became the wisdom, not naturally inclined to be a wisdom, doesn't have the experience. Rand's dad is there. He's busy dying of some sort of a disease, and she says, this is easy to cure if you were back at the White Tower, and Aes Sedai could cure you very easily. But she's cut off from the One Power while she's in there. So even when she's trying to heal him, that doesn't work. Very interesting scene, because she still thinks that Rand's dead, but she spares that news. She spares him that news because he's in his dying moments and she's saying he's okay and everything. And again, I think this is focusing on the fact that she had a fear as the wisdom. She had a responsibility to look after that town, and she's left that behind to go with the rest of the folks to the White Tower, to go with Rand and Egwene and everything like that. So she really has this fear that, you know, she's let her responsibilities go, and she's seeing it play out.
Yes. And as Lena's just pointed out too, Nasi Cawthorn is Matt's mother.
Oh, right. I missed that.
Yeah. I couldn't remember if it was Matt's mother or sister. There's definitely links to his sister, sisters and Aes Sedai in the books. It's an interesting one. The fact that they know, because if I can remember rightly, she left, or that they all thought she had died during that Trolloc fight in the season one when the Two Rivers came in. So the fact when the Trollocs came to the Two Rivers, so the fact that she was there and they're like, we know you're an Aes Sedai, thought that was interesting. You said, she couldn't touch the One Power, which is what the Aes Sedai said you wouldn't be able to do within the Archers. It's an interesting scene. It's just another one where she's trying to get back to save her people. And that's very much how she is. She wants to just keep everybody safe.
She's taking on all of the responsibility because she's also, from memory, the oldest out of all of them. You know, so she's got that, I'm the older one. I need to look after all of my friends, but also she's kind of trying to look after everyone. She's taking on the weight of the world on her shoulders. And I think with the fact that she's such a strong potential channeler, that also puts even more pressure on her to live up to what people are expecting her to be. And the I guess the way out approaches her again. She runs out. She lets them know, oh, we'll be back. So clearly thinking, like, showing us she can't differentiate between the dream world and the real world at this stage because in her mind, this is real. Like, the two rivers need them now, and she needs to go back. And it was interesting, the conversation. We kind of glossed over this, but even when she left the Archers the first time, she asked Leandrin and the rest of the Aes Sedai that were there, who was it? It was Leanne Sheriffin. I forgot the other one. So Leanne's the keeper, and then it's the main.
And Sheriam, and then Leandrin. Sheriam's
yeah, so not, she not asks them, if I was to stay, if I did things differently, would it change the outcome? Would it change the outcome? Which I thought was an interesting question.
Yeah, 100%. And they're just savage. She's just like, no, won't, you know.
Your burden's your own.
Yep.
We don't want to hear about it. Deal with it.
And Sheriam is quite brutal. She's got a couple scenes in this episode where she's just straight to the point. Just deal with it. Compartmentalize your emotions and carry on.
It's brutal to see. But the third one is an interesting one. This is the one where she goes and she's in red clothes. Now, I don't know if that symbolizes anything. I don't know if the red clothes symbolizes that she could become, because again, I don't know any of the spoilers for people who are watching or listening to this later on. I don't know if that symbolizes that she will become a red Aes Sedai. I kind of feel like she will because of a few different reasons, and we'll talk about that later on. But, you know, she goes in the red clothes, and she has this vision about blood, and she's got this hair braid in her hands. She comes out of it full of blood, the hair braid. She didn't know what she was doing. She heard Lan's voice in the vision. And she thinks that she potentially could have, you know, taken him out. Like, I don't know if I can use the actual word here on YouTube and if YouTube will like that, but, you know, she's potentially taken him out. She's taken him out in that vision, and she kind of refuses to take the ring, which was a very interesting scene. It had me fully believing that this was real. I did not realize that she was still within the Archers until she left to meet Lan, and then the Archers came in the back, and I remember sitting there and I was like, oh no, she's still in it. It's like Inception.
Yeah, and that was an interesting one too. That was, I think, the first time I noticed and it was, I think, Andre pointed out in a tweet that someone pointed out the symbol on the water jug, and that was kind of the first time we saw that, which was almost a bit of a nod to say you're still within the dream. And I was very cautious and very aware of that when later on, they're standing there and she doesn't come out, and they're actually still holding the same patent jug. So they didn't have it in the first one though, which was in the first when she gets out first, which I thought was interesting. They must have just turned it around. But the time duration spent in that arch, the third arch, was interesting as well.
Yeah, this years, because she had a kid with him, and the kid grew up to be, I don't know, how old do you reckon the kid would have been? Maybe like 5-6 years old in the
Probably about that. I was thinking about that. And the red, I don't know. The Leandrin's there. She's a red. Maybe she had a bit of channeling into the archway at some stage, or had it prepped for doing something. Don't know. Someone interfered with it. Lots could have caused that. And also when she's faced with the arch, and at the very first time when she's with Lan, it's very weak. The others were all very strong, and you could sort of see it quite clearly, but that one time when it had been masked, and it was very, very faint for her to see and hear, because she didn't really pick it up. So maybe there was a bit of doctoring going on, a bit of foul play. Who knows?
Interesting. Well, you know, she doesn't come back out. She chooses to stay with Lan, and this is where Sheriam comes forth. She's the Aes Sedai in charge of the novices, and she is really upset with Leandrin in this moment. And you can see, like, Leandrin herself had, by the way, the acting the acting of Wheel of Time. Like, I don't care if you, like, you could be pissed off about the fact that the books are not followed 100% and that they're having to change stuff. But one thing you cannot take away from these very capable actors and actresses this season is that we are seeing some great performances. Like, I think Leandrin, like, not understanding what Leandrin's character would have been like in the books because I haven't read far enough in there, I think the person who's acting Leandrin is doing a phenomenal job at it. I think Shirim, phenomenal job. The raw scene between the two of them having this chat about Leandrin trying to be overambitious to get Nynaeve to go and do this too early on, about her conscience not letting, wouldn't let her go off what happened, and she hoped Leandrin's also have that. And then also just seeing the moments on, like, you know, some actors and actresses have got the ability to show with their face the emotion. You could see Leandrin's, you know, sort of her whole demeanor dropped, and she was very upset about Nynaeve not coming back. What I don't know yet, because Leandrin's so calculated and she does everything for a reason, is she upset because she lost out on the power that Nynaeve could bring back, or is she actually upset because she cares about Nynaeve and the person behind it? To me, it feels like it's the power.
I think there's definitely layers going on there. Leandrin, see episode 4, you get a bit more of an idea about Leandrin and what she's up to. At this point, it's still very you're still very unsure. Leandrin is definitely very calculated, masterful at deception, I'm guessing. She's great. Shirim, on the other hand, she's solid. She's a solid, and the acting, as you said, is very well done. The only
you could
one
feel
that
the
I
emotion.
Find, most definitely. The only one that I find that I struggle with a little bit is Lan. Some of his acting, he's trying to be.
He's a bit bland.
But he can't show a lot of emotion, but you can see that the actor's clearly wanting to show a lot more than should be shown. So he's sort of doing that internal fight with that. But the girls, like the three, Egwene, Elaine, and Nynaeve, their acting is on point.
It is absolutely. And I mean, listen, we're going to talk about, there's going to be some scenes to talk about with Nynaeve and some of the acting that came back from her. Like, I think Nynaeve, the actress, obviously proudly New Zealander, she's doing a good job. She's done a very good job.
And crafted through Power Rangers, which is very well known for its quality acting, but.
I didn't even know that she was in Power Rangers, but there you go.
She was indeed.
Andre Lee here says, The Last Arch, a glimpse of future for Matt. I'm so happy. And that's something that I did notice when I wrote down my notes. He came to them on a horse and he had like very nobleman-like clothes on, which I found interesting. He looked like he was from wealth, you know, like he was a nobleman or something like that. So interesting that is a shout out to where he potentially could be in the future.
Ah, it was great. Very charming. Perrin also, you know, Matt's looking regal, and also once again Honey Cakes came in, and then Lan being the cook in that whole scene too was quite entertaining, because Nynaeve throughout the books is very well known to be a terrible cook. So they were like, yeah, let's get some honey cakes, let's go see your dad who's been cooking it, which I thought was a nice wee nod for the readers as well, which not a lot of people would have necessarily picked up on. Nice to see Matt, his little arc that we see over these two episodes as well. We're slowly starting to see a bit more of him, which is nice.
Let's talk a little bit about a character that you briefly mentioned, because as we go through this episode, episode 3, we start getting a little bit of a focus on my favorite character of the show. Also my favorite character of the books, actually, Perrin. I really enjoy Perrin.
Yeah.
I enjoyed him in the books, and I enjoy the fact that they're circling back on the season to things that happened in book one already, you know, like him being out with the wolves, being out like you know, camping and stuff in episode 4. I found that story in the books to be the most interesting one. I don't know if I've openly said this on the live yet, but Rand for me in the first book was so boring.
Yeah.
Getting through his bit, and he talks for like, I don't know, like 60% of the book before you actually get to hear from any of the other people. And Perrin was like the first character that was introduced to me and his point of view on the books outside of Rand's. And I immediately liked it. I'm only one book in. So obviously my my favorites may change as the book continues on, but I really enjoy Perrin and I really enjoy the actor who's playing Perrin so far. I think he's doing a phenomenal job as well. I think the casting is really on point, but we see a little bit here of Perrin and the fallout from the village that he's in that got attacked. We kind of ended there with the previous episode with the High Lady Seroth on the big, what is that pyramid-like figure.
Yeah, yeah.
Ishamiel with her as well. And then they're making people bow. They're forcing them to bow and bend the knee. What did you think of this scene? The fact that they've come back to a lot of the things that you spoke about kind of got revealed because, yes. You know, we didn't know that it was going to happen in episode 3, but they're coming back to reclaim the land that was once theirs.
Yes. And yes, they did mention about that, which I thought was really interesting. And that's very much how the Sanshin work when they come back over to is they'll basically they take all the girls that can channel and there was a link to that too. Sorry, I'm sort of jumping around all over the show with the Dalmain and the Soldain coming out and the Dalmain looking and going her, not speaking it, just pointing, and then the girls are getting taken. And anyone watching that in that village scene has no idea why these girls are being taken. They're assuming the worst. But the next scene afterwards, we cut to Rand with Loghain, and Loghain talks about the fact that he had seen Rand and Tar Valon and could see that the energy, the aura of the One Power around him. And that's a little nod to saying that the men can do it, the women can as well. So that's what the Dalmain's doing, is going up and saying, and sort of seeing the power, the One Power that girl can touch the source and pulling her off. The Perrin's fantastic. He definitely has a few arcs in the books that are tough to get through. We won't go into those, but the character at this stage is fantastic, especially when he's starting to learn about being a wolf brother.
So interesting. Very interesting storyline.
Yeah, and very interesting the arc that and the conversation he has in the back of the carriage with Ishamiel as well.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting because in the books, the Forsaken actually refer to the Wolf Brothers as being actually older still and very, very ancient power. And they're not even overly familiar with it because it was so old and forgotten even then. So the fact that in here he's like, you know, you're on our side. It's complete bollocks.
Beast you become, the more you become me.
And Perrin doesn't know otherwise. He just assumes that if I let the anger take over, I'm siding with the Dark One, and that's what he'll be battling with internally. Love the introduction of the wolves. Hopper, I was so thrilled when Hopper was introduced.
And the way that they did it as well was really cool with him being at camp saying, you know, he lost his mate as well, which obviously they have to like link that into the story with the parent of the TV show having lost his wife, and that he will show him the way or show him his name when he's ready. And then you've got him hopping up and down in the vision. I thought was really cool. Yeah. And learning a little bit more about also the instincts and stuff. Like I don't know if anybody else in the live, you let me know in the live, am I the only one that's finding the parent storyline interesting? Like I'm like, give me the parent storyline. I want to know more about the Wolf Brothers. Like they're cool, man. Like I'm team werewolf at this point in the show.
Yeah. And there's a few scenes I think that we're still to come. I'm curious to see. There's definitely one scene with a cage, and I'm just wondering about whether or not that will be in the TV series. But I think maybe with the links from Ishamiel and the discussion in the back of the carriage, they may not need to worry about that arc there. I can't really go into too much. I don't want to spoil anything.
While we're talking about this arc a little bit, I want to bring up someone who came back onto our screens here. Obviously, was it Elias? What's his name? Elias? Ilias.
Yeah. Elias. Yeah.
So Elias coming back into the show here, obviously saving Perrin here in this moment. And then with the whole, what I found interesting with the scene is because Perrin was talking to Elias and saying, you know, so you knew beforehand. That's why you didn't stay in the village, because the wolves can scent them information and things that they see well in advance when they're scouting. So there was potentially something where they knew that the village was going to get overrun. They could have saved people, but Eliza's like, they're not our people. We don't have to care about them. So clearly the lone wolf kind of thing, or the pack being on their own out there, really comes into play. And I found that interesting. And I also found the conversation between him and Perrin interesting when they spoke about the Aes Sedai and how they don't understand, or they don't like to be around things they don't understand, which potentially could make them a threat to the Aes Sedai, which is why they stay away from them.
Yeah, and once again, that links to why, the Elias and the wolves don't like being around people anyway. So it's just a common thing. They don't like the smell. They don't like being around people in general because it's just not safe. So they may or may not have known that the Sanshin were coming, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did. Lena, it's definitely a good arc so far. And it was a really nice scene with Ishmael and Perrin.
They really set it up. They really set the scene up with Ishmael Perrin as well. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a great, great scene. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, actually, from that first scene, and we kind of glossed over it a little bit, is that, you know, I feel like we need to have like a moment for the Fallen in each of these podcasts that we do, because they're falling pretty quickly. We lose in this one. And your reaction is a big one. So that kind of makes me feel like there is a significance to this, because obviously I don't know. I'm just going through this. Well, okay, he was a side character. He died.
Yeah,
you know, but his head was kicked into the spike.
Uno was definitely a side character, but he was he's through it throughout, you know, and his ability his language is the sort of the ongoing joke. Without going into spoilers, I suppose he's dead now. But he did. In the stories, he's supposed to link up with the Nynaeve and that. And Nynaeve, basically, he keeps his tongue around her. You know, he stops swearing and he just basically just doesn't talk or just goes to yes and no's because he's too scared about swearing in front of her. It's just a nice little bit of humor tucked in within this story. And he's just a great character. He really is. There's also another character that's not been introduced yet, there's a lot of depth. Stupidly, we could go into quite a bit of depth about Uno, who's a side character, just because there is so much potentially there. But it's all gone because of a spike, you know. I noted about, I loved his eye patch with the eye. The character itself, you know, he's scarred up. There's a lot of interesting elements to Uno that and they obviously took a bit of time in crafting him as a character, both in the book and in the show, and they've killed him off essentially twice because we thought he had died at the end of episode 8 of season 1. He ran out of reserve.
Uno ran out of reverse Uno cards. Well, let's get into a little bit of the next scene here, which was the interesting one with Rand and Loghain. You kind of already jumped the gun and spoke about it a little bit, but we'll talk about it in further depth here. We see Rand go back to the asylum. He works with Loghain, and then very interestingly, Loghain, like you mentioned earlier here in the podcast, already saw through Rand. Like he remembers him. He says the fact that you've cut your hair doesn't hide anything, which again is funny. You went through the whole thing of explaining why he did it, and then Loghain kind of, you know, they explained it to us. It's just we had to wait an episode for that explanation to come. He saw through it. He remembers seeing him while he was in the cage, that scene of him laughing straight looking at him because he could see the power, one power around him, I guess. That was interesting. And then asking him, when will you ask the question that you want to ask? So let's cut through the BS. You're here for a reason. You would have worked months to get here.
Yeah.
Like, what are you here for? And then he sets him on this whole goose chase to go and get this red wine from a place that he's from originally, just for him to pour it all out when he finally returns it to him, which I thought was hilarious.
Chucks the bottle. Yeah. And it's insane. You know, he's gone a bit mad from the use of the power, which is.
So it's not a lie, because he said that it's a lie that the Aes Sedai tell about men going crazy to. Yeah, he looks a little bit mad. Maybe that's in his character, but do they actually go mad, or is it a lie that the Aes Sedai tell so that they can imprison men or rip the power from them?
No. There's definitely what's called the taint upon the man's one power. Basically, when I think it was in the last episode of season 8, when they cut to Luz Theron and he's talking about going off, it's like it's the start of the scene of the episode where he's talking to an Aes Sedai and he's like, we're going to go and do this and try and seal up the Dark One. But they only had men channelers. The women weren't going to get involved. And because the men went by themselves to do it, the Dark One touched Sedai and left a bit of the taint on that. So they do slowly go mad. And as they refer throughout these two episodes, the men kill the people that they love the most first. And go crazy. So no, it's definitely not a lie, I suppose. And then he talks about hearing voices, which we know that Rand is also hearing voices, and that's why he thinks he's the Dragon Reborn. Loghain does, because he feels that he's hearing Luz Theron and Telamon talking to him. But we also know that Rand is also hearing whispers from Luz Theron. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think basically at this point, any man who gets to the point where they can channel and channel strongly, they start to assume that they're what's called a false dragon or a dragon, and then they try and rally as many people around them, and that's when the Aes Sedai generally come in and try and shut them down real quick.
Yeah.
Before they can gather too many people.
Because Rand is trying to get Loghain to help him control his power, because Loghain has had that power for a lot longer than him, so he's had to have learned ways to suppress it, I believe, up until this point. And it's interesting to see this scene with Rand obviously fearing what Loghain is telling him, the fact that, you know, by the end of this, that you can't control it, you know, it's going to spill all out of you, and he is afraid that he is going to hurt the people closest to him. But before that, there's also a very interesting scene with him and Celine that gets brought in. They have to go to this noble event where I believe some people from the nobles were all having a party together. We didn't get to see the queen there, but there was reference made to the queen in that one.
Yes.
And specifically the hunt for the horn was mentioned there as well. So a lot of interesting things happened there. Talk to us.
Another interesting one, because from memory, Kerahan at that point had a king, not a queen. So that was interesting. They play a game that the royals in Kerahan are very much Daes Damar, I think it's called, if I remember rightly. And it's a game where they basically try and manipulate and read through sort of tricks and triggers and all those sorts of things. So when the lady, what's her name?
I'll bring it up.
I didn't think I typed it up right. I was typing very
quickly. Anvair, yep.
Anvair. Who we find out later is Moiraine's younger sister.
Interesting because Celine had a moment there where she was like, I don't want to engage with this woman. I want to get out of here. It's almost like Celine knew that there was like a family link there or something, which was interesting. It's a very interesting scene before we actually get the big reveal, right? She's like, I'm out of here. I don't want to introduce myself.
Yeah. And that very much, there's a whole lot of this whole, quite a few scenes in the book with Rand sort of working his way through Kerahan royalty and the high lords and ladies, and they try and work out who he is, where he's from, and he keeps getting invitations and just burning them. And that's very much a nod to the book, done a little bit differently, but still a nod to the book. First thoughts on Lady.
So Andre Lee says here, my first thoughts on the lady talking to Rand was OMG. What, why, how, and I understand from a production budget point of view, but just no, please. So obviously she's got some big significance. I don't know what Andre's referencing to the books and why this shouldn't have happened, but in the show it's quite interesting because this is going to come into play going into the next episode, which we'll talk about her again coming into the next episode when we talk about her as a character, because we saw very limited snippets from her here in this moment. I feel like they did some groundwork for it to pay off with Moiraine in the next episode, right?
Yeah, well, and as Andre's just commented, she's only in the prequel book. She doesn't really she doesn't link up at all. But this is all part of trying to give Moiraine a bigger arc in this book, in this series, because she's the main actress. You know, she's
and a production member.
Name. a production member, but also the big name. She's bringing all those American viewers to the show because of her. So they need to try and build her interest up and keep her story out going. So by bringing in her younger sister, which they throw you down your throat quite regularly in that second book, it makes sense. It possibly wasn't needed, but it's just one less character that they got introduced. It's a character, there's a reason for it. It's not just a random character that they introduced for the sake of introducing one, I think.
Yep. Yeah. Let's talk about someone we haven't mentioned at all yet, and her storyline throughout this first episode of the week. We've got Egwene, and I don't know, man. Egwene, for me, I feel like the TV show production team is doing her a bit dirty this season, because she really is being put to the side. She's basically, I was writing down the notes, and I was like, she's doing slave labor in the White Tower. All she's doing is cleaning and cooking, and you know, like she's really a sideline character at this point, and not a main character almost, you know. And she's almost like she's in the way, and I think they're doing it on purpose. Obviously, there is going to come a point where her full potential will be realized, and this is part of character development for her to get to that point. But she comes to find out when she goes to look for Nynaeve that Nynaeve's not there. Shirim is having a conversation with her, saying she's gone, she didn't make it back. She refuses to believe it. You've got Elaine there trying to console her. She even pushes her away, doesn't want anything to do with her, just to go down to the Archers to try and get Nynaeve back. And it was an interesting scene, because she's trying her best, and Elaine's trying her to telling her to calm down, because for over thousands of years, many people have lost lovers and things like that, and they could never get them back. It takes multiple Aes Sedai to be able to open one of those Archers, and even then, there's no guarantee.
Oh, yeah. There was some really, actually, they were doing it dirty, but there was actually a couple really good moments for Egwene in this. I felt the grief, your grief is your own. Shirim basically saying to Egwene, you've got time, but it will pass. You know, you just need to deal with it. Like you said, the moment she has with Elaine, you know, I don't even know you. Like, we've just met. I'm trying to, you know, you don't need to be trying to tell me. She'll be feeling guilt for everything that she'd talked about in the previous episode, where she was feeling jealousy. And there'll be an internal guilt there, going, I've let my friend down here. I wasn't there for her when I needed it, because I was too busy worrying about my selfish thoughts. So that will be, you know, she's lost her friend. She'll be feeling bad about being, feeling jealous. You didn't mention, just before she goes down to the Archers, she actually meets up with Leandrin on that ledge, and hits up Leandrin about it.
Massive. That was massive.
And that was a huge scene where, you know, Egwene's like, you don't know. And Leandrin's like, you don't matter.
She's like, you can't define me.
You're a fly. You don't matter to all of this. But she does, because
she's one of the chosen. She's one of the four. She's one of the main four, well, five, I guess.
Yeah,
she's one of the main five that, you know, I think you mentioned this in the last week when we spoke about the fact that it's been thousands of years since there have been anybody that are more powerful than Aes Sedai. And now suddenly there are five of them coming up, and like, you know, at one point she might not, I don't know if she's going to be the strongest. Nynaeve may still be stronger than her with pure just power, but the fact that she's a part of the five probably means she will be stronger than any of the other Aes Sedai. At some point she will reach a potential where she'll get pretty strong in her own right.
Yeah, well, they talk about Tavarin, people that have the wheel weaving around them, where they can sort of control and direct, and they're like a drop in a bucket of water, and then the ripples go out from. So in the books, they talk about the three boys being Tavarin. They are the biggest Tavarin. Like, things will change around them, with Rand being the biggest. And throughout, and it's a really nice way of, it's good writing, in the sense of, because of this Tavarin, the power of Tavarin, you touch someone and then they go off, and then they link up again with other characters, and it makes sense because of them being Tavarin and that sort of impact. Whereas if they didn't have that term, that reasoning, it would feel sometimes a bit forced as to, why are they running in? Like, that's just silly. That doesn't make sense why these characters would randomly run into each other. Whereas in the books, it makes sense because of this. They definitely need to show more of these Taverin instances, because they talk about it only just being the boys, but you sort of get the feeling that it's also the girls as well, because they've spent so much time with these boys growing up, these boys, you get the feeling that it's the girls as well. So Egwene and Nynaeve, a lot of the things that they do ripple out as well, but they're never really talked about as being Taverin. Yeah, but I think in the show's setting, they are trying to envelop to say that all five of them have these sorts of special ripples. But we'll see. They haven't really talked about Taverin at all much from memory. So we'll see if it starts to play a bit more into it. Egwene, yeah, wait and see. She's
There's one scene you didn't mention. There's one scene I want to bring up. There's one scene you didn't mention. Or one specific line that Leandrin had for Egwene, which I feel like is going to become... it's going to be a big character development thing for Egwene moving forward in the show. And she said, it's not always the strongest sister that survives. It's the one that, what was the line? It's the one that's it's the one that's like, I feel like she mentioned it's like the one who thinks the best or like can maneuver
the best.
Only
the woman that survived get their place in history.
Yes. And she said, it's not always the strong that survive. I feel like she meant like you can use your wits basically to survive as well.
I think she's referring to herself. Leandra is thinking of herself. She's like, probably, I said, the Aes Sedai definitely had a pecking order for power, that, you know, the more powerful you are, essentially you are higher up. So she's just like, she won't be the most powerful of Aes Sedai Leandrin, and she's definitely not, but she's like, hey, you don't have to be the most powerful to be remembered. It all depends on your actions, which is true. We shall see. And then Egwene claps back with the, you have no idea what I am capable of. And that's, it's going to be cool to see what happens with her later on.
All right, we need to talk about the Matt of it all. Mm-hmm. We haven't spoken about Matt yet, so let's get into a little bit of what happened here with him in episode 3. We're still on episode 3. So Matt here at this point, he has Leandrin coming into his cell. He wakes up being typical Matt, saying, you know, we upgraded to stalking now, and have you just
noticed...
You're going
to murder me.
Are you here to murder me? Do you want to seduce me? Do you think that in the light I look better? You know, all the normal Matt type of lines that he has. But it's quite interesting because Leandrin actually lets him free. She opens up his cell. She, at this point, you know, in the story, it kind of feels like she's almost having pity on him a little bit because she just lost Nynaeve. But clearly we know by the end of the two episodes, she still has a plan with Matt. And this is all part of the bigger scheme of what is going on. But it's interesting because she continues to really... psychologically bully him, you know, like she's been doing for two episodes straight by saying stuff like, you ran away, your friends didn't really leave you, you know, you're not dependable, and you know, Egwene could really use a friend right now, to the point where he goes there and he can't even, like, he feels not worthy to even have a conversation with her, and he's just not even emotionally up to having that conversation, which was such a great scene where she looks away or looks towards the arch where he was standing, and he's already moved away and he's already gone. It was such an interesting sort of segment with him.
Yeah, and his character. And you could hear the footsteps as he's walking away.
Yeah.
You know, you could see this girl that he's grown up with in tears crying on the bench, and he's not confident and capable to emotionally to go through and support her, because he feels like he's let her down. He knows that he left them all as they went into the ways. And he didn't go on with them. He essentially chickened out, wussed out. It was like, no, he selfishly went and did his own thing. And that's what Leandrin's been playing on his mind with for months.
She's kind of defining him. She's almost shaping him, because at this point she's making him believe that her view of who he is true. Which is, you're not dependable. You're not someone that can be there for your friends. You're someone that's always going to take the easy way out, type of thing, you know. And he's really sort of falling into the trap that she's setting for him. And it's interesting because obviously at this point he's also got Min, who he then helps to get into his cell, and they're on their way out to go and escape. Very interesting scene with, at the end of this, we learn that Min is also being manipulated by Leandrin, because I guess it's hard to talk about Min without sort of knowing what happened in episode 4, but she's trying to get rid of her visions. Her visions to her is not a power that she wants. She feels like it's a curse.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. And talking about Matt just real quick, what were we talking about? We Sorry, I've lost my train of thought.
That's all right. So I was just saying that Matt was like, he's being manipulated to believe he's this person that's not dependable.
Yeah, and also she refers to Moraine having had her put him in a cell. So what she's also doing is she's sowing this distrust of Aes Sedai. So he's not going to trust Aes Sedai. He's definitely not going to trust Moraine anymore, which is a huge problem going forth for Moraine, because she's just trying to navigate to the last battle, essentially, and she needs all of her chess pieces in play, and he's going to now not trust Aes Sedai. Andrea is talking about Min being a big part as a member of the cast and storyline. She's massive. Her character is really interesting, and I'm really enjoying seeing this side of her story, how her family used her. There's a dream scene in episode 4 where her family is using her as like a fortune teller, and you pay, and all she's seeing is death here and death there and death here, and she wants to get rid of it, understandably, because it's all negative. Her relationship with Matt, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. It was definitely always a fun pairing when they happen in the books, and interesting. You don't see it much in the books, so it's quite good to see that already the pairing up now.
I agree. So going into episode 4 here, there was a very interesting scene right at the beginning of the episode with Shamiel walking in this cave, and you know, there was this whole flashback about this is only the beginning. He's going to open up the archers to bring more, or not the archers, but open up whatever rift there is or whatever portal there is to bring more of the Forsaken into the world, or awaken them back into the world. And then we see the first one that he brought back in blood, the hair. I immediately, because, and again, this is not because I realized Celine was going to be big, because I told you last time, I was Googling and I was like, she's big. I can't look at this. Looks like there's something. So I immediately shut it out. But I immediately knew Celine's not to be trusted, because even that scene between her and Rand where they're making love and she's like, I'm not afraid of your power. Show me all of that. A normal person would not act like that, even though it was a dream. And clearly there's more to her. Like, you could just, anybody could tell that. But seeing that scene, I was immediately, that's her. Like, I know that's her. He brought her back. You know, what an interesting scene.
Yes. I was in two minds. There's another sort of an evil character that I thought maybe it could have been, but definitely I had written down that it was Lan.
She's the strongest of the Forsaken, Moraine. She mentioned that she's the strongest of the Forsaken. Is that true? Is that a true? Because and even that whole scene, let's talk about that scene, because Moraine, we had someone really lose their shit in the comment section. I forgot their name, because Moraine was able to take a fade on without her powers and kill them, and said that Lan should have been a lot stronger in that first episode where he took on the three fades. He should have been a lot more competent. He didn't really need her help as much, and that she would have been pretty useless without her power. She comes in here without her power and slits the throat of Forsaken. Like, how is that possible?
and catches them unawares too. That's so and she's so engulfed. That whole situation was really, really interesting. First of all, I'm like, why on earth are they lying outside when they've got a perfectly good hut?
I was a bit weird.
The situation with the fade coming in and and Rand having to use the one power for that, very much a setup by Celine. Very much so.
Clear subtle manipulation being used with him there to make him feel bad and for her to pull him further in. Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, and then the
love thing, and then the storyline with I know we're jumping to the end of the episode, but we're on it. The whole storyline about her finding her one true love again and then killing them. Like, what's the significance? Why does she need to kill him? Like, what does she get? Is because she stops him from being able to prevent them from coming back into the world? Like, give us a little bit of an insight as to why. It's kind of like a Black Widow type of scenario with her playing with her prey to take him out or something. I don't get it.
She was not going to kill him. She was about to when she had him tied up to the bed, she was about to sort of let him know who she was. She was about to take the mask off. She's playing a character at the moment, Celine being the character. So she was about to sort of unveil being Lanfear and saying, look, you know, we're equals here. And I think
so she actually does. It's interesting because so she obviously does care for him in a certain way as well, because is he like the reincarnation of her previous lover, and that's where the connection comes. Like, that's kind of what I'm getting from this almost.
Yeah. I don't know if it's spoilers or not, but Lanfear was very much entangled with Luz there in Talamon. She talks about taking a previous lover up to the mountains. I believe it was definitely a Luz Theron Talamon, and then Luz Theron chose someone else in the end to marry, and Lanfear never really gave up on him, and that's kind of what. Yeah, I know, Andre, it's spoilers, but he asked the question. What do I say? I'm not answering that.
Spoilers. I don't think anything massive is being given away, and this is just me sort of spitballing about what the connection could be. I feel like this, even if you watch the TV show, it's kind of leading that way, because from having read the first book, I know that a lot of them are like coming back from a time that they've been locked away, and the dragon reborn in itself should be the reincarnation of the original dragon, right? So if she had some sort of a relationship with the original dragon, I don't think it's too far-fetched to think that that is the connection that she's got with him and why she sees that. And to the point where, you know, it's big words here from Rand, because he does tell her that he loves her, like in this segment here. And he has very strong reaction to Moraine taking her out.
Yeah, I had a thought about that too. He's 20. He's very naive in love. His previous one's just been Egwene. You know, you get a 20-year-old with an experienced woman, you know, the old lust and honeymoon and all those sorts of things. He's infatuated with her at this point, and he's, you know,
hey, she's studying, by the way. Like, who wouldn't be?
Yeah, exactly. So he's not thinking necessarily with his brain. Let's put it that way. Quick question for Lena's asked a question just a little bit earlier on. Is Nynaeve a novice, Aes Sedai, or something else? She's an accepted, which is what you go to next after having passed through the three arches. You become an accepted, which means you get the Aes Sedai ring. You have that outfit with the stunning Aja colors on the sleeves, and you've got a lot more freedom. So the novices will bow down and do that sort of curtsying to her as she goes past. She's sort of like the next level up now. She's not an Aes Sedai, but she's got a lot more freedom. And she's got a new room. You saw when she was reliving her trip to the Arches, she's sitting in this stunning looking room, and it is a big change from the novice quarters that she'd been in and the other girls were in.
There was a really funny and awkward scene with her walking past Elaine and Egwene, and where they both had to bow for her, which was quite funny to see, because there's now this ranking thing that's come into play between them as well as friends. But yeah, that was interesting to see. So obviously she's got the ability to move freely in between, and she hasn't decided yet. And there's an interesting scene with her. She walks down and there are warders that are fighting or training, and there's like this young guy, a young warder. I'll bring up the photo of him sort of being a little bit amazed by her, because yeah, very forward and very amazed by her. Clearly, you know, impressed by the fact that Nynaeve got through the trials as quickly as she did. Like, it's the fastest anyone's gone through it. She's well known as someone that potentially has the most power they've seen in thousands of years. He wants to be her ward. And
he wants to be her ward. He's flirting with her. He's like, hey, have you chosen an Aja yet? And his mind is thinking, please don't choose her. Please don't choose her. Please don't choose her. Let's go green and then I can, you know, jump on be your warder. You know, any other archer, just don't choose Reed.
And I feel like it's very obvious by this scene that she's going to choose Red not to deal with men, not to deal with this kind of situation. She's going to be like, I don't want these warders to be like falling over themselves to deal with me. So I just have this feeling. And again, I don't know what she's going to be, but I feel like this could push her towards that Red Aja.
I'm not saying a word.
There was a very interesting scene while we're talking about who could be what. In that scene of Nynaeve being back in or having this long, like she was there years and years with Perrin being there, with Lan being there. She got a letter from Egwene during that time, and she said Egwene is moving with the other Greens, which kind of may have given away that Egwene might become a Green if this is foreshadowing what she chooses down the line, which would be very interesting, because now that I understand the Greens a little bit more, obviously she had that interesting conversation with Alana trying to give her advice, and
The Greens are the battle archer as well. Like, they're the ones who lead the fight. They're the generals in the war. So that's kind of makes sense that she'd be up the front. You know, she lost Rand, essentially, as far as she knows, and as far as Nynaeve knows, to the battle against the Dark One. So she's wanting to lead the fight against them as well. She can have orders, and then she can go to battle. So that's, definitely. It was a good pick up on that. Good pick up on that. Not everyone will have picked up on that little nod, so well done.
Yeah. Lena giving us a super sticker saying, keep it up with the $5. Thank you so much, Lena. It's always appreciated. We'll go straight back into the channel here as we continue to add more shows. I'm loving this. I'm loving doing some scripted TV shows. It's different from what we normally do on the podcast, a different vibe. But, we'll, you know, having you on here with all your knowledge, it really – it lifts the quality of the podcast. Like, otherwise I would have just gone off by what I've seen on the TV show so far. So I'm really appreciating everything, and I appreciate everybody on the live.
Oh yes. And please don't hesitate to shout out if I've got anything wrong. I try please. Cause I think the last time I went through the series was during the 2020 lockdown. So it's been a couple of years.
I'm trying to see if there is anything that we missed. We kind of, there's a few storylines that we spoke about, both of them together. The whole Perrin scene here, where he's out in the wild, where he learns about the instincts and things. We've kind of seen that already. There's a storyline we haven't spoken about at all yet, which is the one with the different waters and with Lan and Alana being out on their own. I think they're with Alana's like family at this stage. And Alana said, this is the first time you've brought a man back here in ages. So will you bring a new person in? And Lan's having to deal with being cut off. To me, it's interesting because I know that this storyline isn't part of the main story. And I've got to be honest with you, it feels like the weakest storyline out of the storylines at the moment. You can kind of tell it's just not on that same level of quality. What did you think about this whole Lan talking to the other warders? It just feels like we've been beating a dead horse here with him being disconnected. And the only interesting thing is that he's supposed to have wanted to commit suicide or something by this time in the story. YouTube, please don't hate us for saying that. This is not real life, you know, but he was supposed to take himself out of the game, and he hasn't done that yet, which shows that the interesting thing was, because one of the warders, the guy with the blonde hair, he was telling him, well, you know, it shows that you can continue because I've been cut off or I've been suppressed for a long time. Yeah. And he said, Moraine's been doing that to me for months, which actually shows Moraine cares, because before she left, she kind of gradually got him off the connection for months before she just left him. It's almost like she knew she wanted him to survive, and she kind of trained him to be able to be without her before she left.
Yeah. That blonde warder, Maxim. It's an interesting one, that bond and the links. And yes, I've just seen Esteban's comment about my top. Thanks very much.
I think it looks good.
More of a peach. It's more of a peach. Thank you.
I think Esteban's full of it.
Yeah. He's just hungry. He's a hungry man.
He's lunch jealous, mate. He doesn't. He doesn't have his own one. Like, you know, now he's got to put you down.
I'll send it to him. It's fine. Maxim, it's an interesting one. The whole cut off to Alana's family is just a bit weird. They're trying to give Lan some more screen time and trying to give him a bit of depth and try to explain what's going on there, but it feels a little bit disingenuous. It doesn't feel like we really need it. It doesn't feel like it's moving the story on anyway. Maxim Water Act would make good pirate boy replacement for Princess Bride.
It doesn't look like the water is what Andrew is saying.
It's an interesting one. You know,
I don't know. The storyline is the weakest for me out of the storyline so far. We haven't spoken too much about it, but there was a bit going on there. It's going to be interesting to see where Lan goes. I know that there was also the point where another interesting part for me was when Alana said to Lan that, you do know that Nynaeve has just gone through the archers. She's become an accepted. So she gives him the news, and she says that she's going to have to choose a ward soon, and you could be that ward for her, you know? And yeah. obviously knowing that there's a strong connection between her and Lan, but Lan not wanting to make the same mistakes again, he doesn't want to be her ward. Plus, would you really want to be, like, because the ward is almost like a submissive role to the Aes Sedai. Like, if you really wanted to be in some sort of a relationship with someone, you don't necessarily want to be at that disadvantage. But it was interesting that it was being sort of offered as a carrot to try and get him back to White Tower.
Well, some Aes Sedai and warders are known to be married. So they are known to be married. But then there's also the issue with, and as they talk about quite regularly and nod to quite regularly, is the age that the Aes Sedai live to. Warders do get a little bit more length of time, but still not forever, not as long as the Aes Sedai live for. So you kind of, you know, you're going to outlive your husband, essentially, quite, you know, which is an interesting one. Yeah, she's trying to get him to go. And I wondered when there's a scene where Lan has a letter and opens it, and you can see him sort of really struggle with something. I thought that was maybe a note to say that Nynaeve had been lost in the archers, but then it cuts later on to him meditating and talking with the other warder, and it's got Alana and Maxim going through Lan's stuff and seeing that it's actually the fact that Lanfear has been broken out. So Lan knows that, and he's battling with whether or not he has to go, because he's trying to work out whether or not he needs to go and find Lan. To Ran, sorry, or if he's going to go to Nynaeve, and he's probably having that little internal battle himself.
Interesting, yeah, because Ran's supposed to train with him, right? To learn how to fight with the sword,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
supposed to be like a blade master, but they've also got the other guy, which didn't make an appearance. I think it was Errol or something.
Errol, yeah, he didn't come back.
Didn't make an appearance in this episode. But so, anyways, so yeah, moving on. A big part, and this is interesting because obviously, I don't like the Lan part of the story in this last couple of episodes. I found it to be like a little bit dragging out to me. But Moraine's storyline was interesting, even though I know that she's not part of, or this is not supposed to be part of the main books. She's going back. She meets with her little sister, who now is older than her. So again, it's that struggle of staying young while the people around you grow older and sort of fades away. I think Leandrin also mentions the struggle that Aes Sedai have with that. And obviously with her son being as old as he is, but it's an interesting scene because again, I don't know how to put it, man, but she comes across really sort of selfish in a lot of these scenes at this point, like not really caring about her sister, not wanting to sit down to have like food with her, demanding her old room back and then leaving and going off to do her own thing.
I had to laugh. And in that, she's like, I want to keep a low profile. And then she rocks up at the foregate dressed like an Aes Sedai, where everyone else is impoverished and poor and struggling. Yeah. And she's wearing jewelry and she's just standing there like, yep, that's me. Like, I had to laugh at that. It's like, you were trying to go undercover, but you know for sure that everyone has spotted you and is keeping an eye on you while you're at the foregate.
But there's certain protection that comes with that as well. I was thinking to myself, like, as she's moving around, even when she's having that conversation with Loghain, where she keeps him kind of under wraps because he's like, shit, she's an Aes Sedai, I can't just attack her. But no one knows that she's been cut off. Like, she keeps that secret for herself, you know, which is interesting for me. And also, I feel like they explained a little bit, because I wasn't sure if the magic that they're using is there to make them look younger when they're already older. But they also explained that, no, when they become an Aes Sedai, they age slower. So they still age, but they just age a lot slower. So clearly, even if she's aging normally now, she hasn't been cut off long enough to look a lot older, if that makes sense.
No, it's only been a few months, isn't it? You know,
and yeah.
She won't have aged too much in the last few months. No, it's... Yeah, everyone still assumes that she can touch the One Power.
Dolores there with a compliment for you all saying, I'm amazed at your knowledge. Well done. I see the show in a new light. I may need to read the books. Dolores, we can read the books together. Like, you know, I'm reading, I've read the first book and I will read the second book probably when the season's done. At some point, I'll try and get that done as well. But I do think that the books, if you approach it in the way that I have, it actually adds to it. It doesn't subtract from it. Yeah. But I feel good that I'm coming into the TV show first in a way, because I don't feel disappointed about storylines being changed or certain characters being left out or anything like that. I'm just taking the TV show at face value at this stage.
Well, what, and if, if you're not so much up for reading it, the audiobooks are currently being re-recorded by Rosamund Pike. She's doing the recording for all the audiobooks currently. So they're going to be released. I don't know if the first one's been released yet, but she's currently reading through all of them, and they'll be released with her reading all of the characters. And she's on interview talking about how she's really enjoying it because she's getting to deep dive into other characters along the way and learn a bit more of the lore. And she's just working through it herself, which I thought was really cool. Like, that's a huge commitment. The book's
sign of dedication.
Like, 100%. And how much she's actually really buying into this role, taking care of this role, and wanting to know more of the lore, which is, I think, really exciting. So if you don't want to read the book, you could possibly wait and listen to Rosamund Pike reading it to you. I'm Moraine going through and reading it.
First book is complete. Nice. Yeah. So she's put as much effort into it as I have so far, basically. Awesome. But listen, I think this is what I was trying to tell people last week as well, when they were upset about some of the changes. And I said, isn't it a good thing that even though the TV show, I know it's not what you wanted, but it's bringing new people to the show, like myself and others, I'm sure, like Dolores potentially, that are actually now open to reading the books and becoming a part of that world. And I think ultimately it's a win for Wheel of Time just by having more people take this on.
Yeah.
Can you read the books to me? Well, can you? I feel like Will's got the right voice, a soothing voice to read the books.
Andre, it would take us forever. My boys get frustrated with me. I read two different chapter books to my boys at the moment, and I fall asleep regularly reading it to them. We often fall asleep. I often fall asleep halfway through a book, so halfway through a chapter. So it would take us years to get through. I'm sorry.
Another thing that's interesting, while we're talking about some of the scenes here that's happened in this episode, is that we continue to see the moonshine episodes between Egwene and Elaine. A little bit of a
I loved that. Yeah. I had that noted down as well. I was like, these girls are just getting on it every night. They're
getting on the booze.
It's like they're uni students, you know, they're off to train, they're learning, and every night they're having a few cheeky ones before having to deal with it the next day. That was great.
It was interesting seeing it, and I love the little dig from Elaine to Egwene, because Egwene couldn't handle the liquor, and saying, aren't you supposed to be the daughter of an innkeeper or something like that? Yeah, that was quite funny. And then the big scene with Nynaeve obviously finding out from Leandrin, of all people, that Perrin's been captured, and Lyell as well. And that puts her into action to try and go and save them. Obviously, Leandrin... very upset, we probably need to backtrack to her having a conversation with the keeper, Leanne as well, and saying to Leanne when the Emerald Seat falls, so will you, basically saying that you're coming down with that. So kind of threatening.
That's a threat. Oh, most definitely a huge threat. And she's an interesting character as well. I'm waiting for and wondering where on earth that the Emerillion seat is. She hasn't been in it since.
That's what Leandrin wondered. Yeah. Leandrin was just as curious as you. She's like, what's the Emerald seat?
And that's it. Like, she's a really important character in the entire series as well. And
the keeper is like, I am the seat. When I speak, that is it.
I really did enjoy that too. It was like, you know, and she's Damani, and I really enjoyed, like, just the little things, the tattoos that she's got hidden under her hand, like under her clothes. Like, you just sort of see little bits, little intricacies, which is just fantastic. And just the power play between the two of them. There's a character, a red Aes Sedai called Elida, that is in the books, and she as of yet has not appeared, and I get a feeling they've combined. Yeah, so this is Leanne here,
the keeper. Yep.
Yeah, the keeper. Now I think the Elida character and Leandrin have been sort of merged together, and that's okay with me, but I think they should have gone with Elida as the main named character, not necessarily Leandrin.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I think Elida plays a bigger part. She has a huge link with Elaine and Elaine's family as well. It's an interesting one. They could still introduce Elida. Maybe that's why they haven't introduced her yet. She may come in later on. But at this point, there hasn't been. And that sort of power play between Leandrin and Leanne is really good. It's really interesting.
I'm enjoying it. I thought it was a great scene. obviously a lot of that was because of the fact that Leandrin wanted to act upon the news of what happened in the West, where Leanne was saying, no, let's just not act on that. That's their burden to carry or something like that. Typical Aes Sedai response to it. And then she's going around the Keeper to talk to Nynaeve, to get Nynaeve to go out and do something about this, or to get them to leave. And this was very interesting because Nynaeve goes to both Egwene and Elaine while they're having this moonshine, great boozy night. And while they're on the booze, probably not the best time to ask them to make a very important decision about their futures, but both of them willing to leave the White Tower, even though they know that this could mean expulsion from becoming Aes Sedai, which I thought was a very interesting scene. We obviously get them going down into like the tunnels below and then Leandrin showing up and just saying, well, looking at Elaine saying you're in a complication, and then hitting them back against the wall. So very interesting. Like that's kind of where they leave us by the end of this episode as well.
Yeah. And that was like, that whole scene, throughout this episode, we get nods to the fact that Leandrin is from the Black Archer. You have the scene with Ishmael and Min, the dream scene there where she's talking about he's talking specifically about Leandrin.
I did not pick that up at all.
And wanting to take Matt to Carahan. Then you've got Min being manipulated by Leandrin as well. Then you've got Leandrin down in the basement blowing the girls against the wall. And there's also that scene prior to that where Nynaeve and Leandrin are at the Archers talking, and she's talking about her son who's about to die, and that, you know, the One Power means you get old and you lose the things that you love. And that's possibly her reasoning for going maybe to the Black Aja Crimson Rootish plotline next episode. We'll see. We'll see.
Currently saying, you are the complication. Currently figure out whom I can use this line to in real life. Well, for those who don't know, he's a headmaster. He deals with a lot of complications on a daily basis. He's used to it, you know.
I could use that line quite regularly. You're a complication, and as a parent, to be fair, you're a complication. Married also. I don't know. I don't know if I'd risk it there. The Elaine being a complication is very much because they can't just make her disappear, because there's a whole Andorian country that will be up in arms if Elaine goes missing. You know, the Queen will be at the door knocking on the White Tower door as to where's my daughter. Whereas, you know, if Egwene and Nynaeve go missing, yes, they were highly powerful, but hey, who's gonna cause an issue there? Nobody. It's just those two girls that have disappeared.
The last thing that I feel like storyline wise we haven't spoken about from this episode, and then after that, if there's anything specific that stood out for you that you want to bring up, feel free to do so. Anybody in the live as well, if we haven't touched on something that you found interesting. But one of the very interesting plot lines, and I saw a comment earlier on from Andre Lee saying that he really hopes that this doesn't mess things up, but with Moraine's sister being on the show right now, she kind of has that moment with her where she's like, I'm not going to be subordinate to you anymore. Like I've moved past this. I've worked really hard. You're going to have to, if you want Rand, you're going to have to deal with me. You're going to have to come through me. She kind of very much pulls a boss move, showing everybody she's spoken to throughout the day, I know about those conversations. And you know, basically telling her, I'm ahead of you in this place. This is you're in my turf. You're in my terrain right now. And then she talks about, you can't mess up what I've been working towards for years and years since you've left and never came back. I've had to rebuild our family name to the point where now we're going to be marrying into the king. Like my daughter is going to marry the next king or whatever that sort of.
It was the son was going to marry the queen.
Oh, the son is going to marry the queen. There you go. So that was an interesting plot line there. What did you think of this scene and the way that it was sort of set up? Because obviously it's a little bit different since she's not supposed to be there, right?
Yeah, 100%. And she talks about, she sort of gives you a bit more of a backstory into Moraine as well, where she talks about our uncle ruined us. Now, her uncle was the king of Carahan, and that was the reason, he's the reason that the whole Ale War started because he chopped down a tree because he wanted to build a throne out of it. So that's why the Ale War completely began full time. The painting of that tree when the sisters were having their I noticed that too. And but I did feel that they definitely pushed the fact that she's the little sister down our throat a little bit. They probably didn't need to go so heavily into that. Yes, once or twice is fine, but then three or four times they showed us a painting of Moiraine with the sister on their knee. Like, come on, you didn't need to be that blunt with it. The fact that the sister turned around and was like, you know, like you said, I've built up my family, the family name again. We've now got my son is about to marry the queen. I'm taking over. I have now got control of your eyes and ears, which is your spy network that Moiraine had, which is a huge power play because now she's got to go through her sister to get any information from those eyes and ears that she had. And we already saw links to her eyes and ears in the scene where she's with Viren and her sister, where she keeps getting people coming in, those messengers. They are her checking in with her eyes and ears for information that's going on. That's how Moiraine keeps a tabs on all the little things that are going on, is because she's got a soldier at the foregate who's under her pay. There's someone here. We see that she has the head of the psychiatric hospital in her pocket as well. You know, I sent him to you. There's the whole scene with her going, you know, I've made sure Logan is here. I've made sure Rand is here so that these two can meet, so that Logan can train Rand on how to use the One Power. This is all showing that Moiraine is very manipulative about the whole thing. She's very controlling. She knows what she's doing.
She doesn't look good on the show, man. I'm telling you now, like, at this point, I don't like Moiraine as a character. Like, just the way that they're portraying her, she comes across as very selfish. I know she's doing it for the greater good, and at some point that will get explained. There is a little bit of an Easter egg that is dropped earlier on in the episode where Alana has that conversation with Lan where she says, you didn't know Moiraine before, but, you know, she was a different person, 20 years ago or something like that. There was something, there was a big event that changed her. I don't think that ever really got fully cleared for us, but there is an Easter egg for stuff to come in the future that will bring more of an explanation for her.
We won't go into that, but it's, that's quite interesting. If they do go into that, it'll be quite
Just, it's just little tidbits because you know that Moiraine can't be she can't be a dislikable character for the whole show. Like, I mean, she's someone that you're going to have to get behind because she's such a big character, right? And but somewhere also, that switch is going to happen. Or you're at least going to understand her better. You're going to understand her better. Let me put it that way. If you maybe you'll still not fully like her methods, but you'd be like, I get it.
And that's because you go from, we don't often get from Moiraine's point of view. It's often from like Rand and his dealings with it, or Perrin and his dealings with it, or Matt and his dealings with it. And they all are very suspicious of Aes Sedai. Mm. You know, Rand is worried that he's going to get stills. Matt has got this whole distrust. And now because of Leandrin and locking him up, he's going to continue to have this distrust of Moiraine. So because she's playing the bigger game, she's playing the long game of chess. She's three or four moves ahead of everybody else, where everyone else is just sort of playing as they with the pieces as they can. And that makes perfect sense that we're not sort of sure what she's got planned because she's already five steps ahead of everybody else. The situation where she's stabs and slits the throat of Selene Lanfear is great because in the books they have a huge, and this is now going to set the reasoning for that, which is cool.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see that play out. Obviously we know that doesn't mean that Selene's out. She's still there.
Well, we saw her eyes open up, didn't we?
Eyes open up.
We've got to run, which is great.
And there is a scene, I know we're jumping all over the place, but we didn't talk about the fact that Marianne is willing to give Logan what he wants with the blade. Like, that was such savage, a badass scene. Like, badass scene. It's like, I'll give you, I know what you want. I'll give you this. Yeah. If you
once
give me what I want.
Once you've done your job, once you've done what I need you and you've fulfilled your duty, happy days. You know, I don't need you anymore. Yeah. And she's Aes Sedai brutality. We see that with likes of Sheriam and that as well.
Yeah. Andrew Lee here says, Loghain is one of my favorite male channelers, but Loghain is taking another of my favorite storylines with Rand Sy. So, yeah. Yeah.
We'll see how that plays out. There is another character we've not had introduced yet, and whether or not we will or not. See, it's an interesting one. There's definitely a fan favorite that's not been introduced yet.
Yeah, Lena also saying here, thank you very much for clearing some things up for us non-book readers. Also, thanks for not spoiling anything for us. I think you're talking around it now. You're doing well, because I don't feel, as someone that has not watched anything, I feel like you're letting us in on some of the behind-the-scenes stuff as it's happening, which is great.
Yeah, sorry, I was just reacting to Andre Lee. It was something I needed to talk about as well, the jacket. His jacket in the when he goes to the nobleman's party is on point with a cover from one of the books, it's just stunning. And you actually see the herons on it as well, which links to being a blade master. The heron is very much a symbol of. Oh no, I loved it. I thought it was great. It's very much a sign of a blade master, the heron bird. So that was kind of that will have had tongues wagging for the Dais D'Mar for the Kirahan nobles as well. Just that jacket alone. I hope it's not the last time we see it, because I thought it was cool.
Yeah. So far, so good for the show. I'm really enjoying it. Will, is there anything that you feel like we kind of brushed over too quickly? Anything we didn't touch upon? I feel like the revelation of this podcast for me personally, and that's when Lena also mentioned about the clearing things up for us, was Leandrin sort of moving towards the Black Aja, which I did not pick up myself. That's a good little tidbit to know going into episode 5. I found it interesting that we only had episode 4 drop this week. Does that mean we're getting one episode per week now? I thought it would be 3 episodes per week.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't actually looked.
We might come back and only cover episode 5 next week, if that's the way. It's easier to cover one episode at a time, I'll tell you that much. But, I don't mind the fact that we're dropping it slowly because we're podcasting about it. If you're not a podcasting person, you probably want it all to drop at the same time so you could just smash it, and just watch it.
Yeah. But that's part of the chat that you don't get with those.
Yes, we didn't talk about this, Lena. We did not. The emotion, the raw emotion from her when she came back from the Arches, holding onto her child, walking through the Arches and still having her arms out while the child's not there. Like, I'm not going to lie, man. I got a bit teary-eyed from that performance. I was like, damn, she's good. Like, she got, like, I felt her emotions. I'm so amazed by the level of the cast when it comes to acting, and specifically Zoe.
It's always a stunner. Like, she's going to go far from the series alone, I think.
I think so as well. She's going to make some of the right connections as well through this. Yeah. She's definitely going to.
She's definitely probably the strongest and had the strongest. She's had the strongest storyline so far, definitely for this season.
Yeah, I feel like it's her show at this point. Yeah, like, at the moment, it's interesting because we had Andre earlier saying something about, will we get boring emo Rand on this season? He's not emo, I feel like, on the TV show at least. But yeah, like, again, it's interesting how in the books he wasn't my favorite character. He's not necessarily my favorite character on the TV shows at the moment either, but I'm open-minded that he could grow into that character that I would like down the line. And I get that there is a time and a place for things to be revealed. So if you're a big fan of Rand from the books, don't hate on me too much, because I'm not like all team Rand right now. Like, it'll come with time, I'm sure. Like, Matt hasn't fully grown on me either yet. Like, I'm like, yeah.
Well, he's not had a lot of time, too. They're working on him slowly. They're trying to pick which characters to build up. And this one, at the moment, they're working on Nynaeve. And she has so much to give as well. It makes perfect sense.
Perrin as well.
A lot more. Yeah.
I feel like Perrin as well. They're giving Perrin and Nynaeve their time to shine right now. And then that might be flipped down the line, and we'll get others coming up. Andre saying team Matt, team Perrin. Yeah, I can endorse the team Perrin so far. I do like Nynaeve. I'll probably be team Nynaeve and team Perrin at this stage, but I'm open-minded for me to love other characters as they grow on the show with us. Anything you wanted to say before we start closing it down here, Will?
No, I'm excited to see what the next episode brings. I watched the fourth episode, and I actually didn't take notes for about the first 10, 20 minutes because I was just engrossed in what I was watching, which is a great testament. It was just really interesting. And I think Episode 4 was probably one of the stronger episodes we've seen so far of the first two seasons.
Every episode gets better and better.
It's getting better.
Every episode. If they can keep that momentum going into 5, I'd be very happy. If you're new to the channel and you haven't seen us before, please consider subscribing. That's the best way to support the channel, to show us that you like this type of content. Who knows what I can get Will to do with me in the future. You know, if we support this enough, we might get him back on to talk about some other great TV shows out there as well.
Sure we can. The other thing, there was a nod to a character that hasn't been introduced yet, which I'm really excited about, was Kadsuain. Alana mentions that Nynaeve was the fastest to go to being from novice to accepted since Kadsuain. And she's a cool character, very interesting character in the books. So I'm hopeful that they do, now that they've sort of mentioned her, referred to her in the series, that we'll get her later on down the track.
In season 3, maybe?
I don't know. Maybe, we'll see. They planted that seed, which was like, oh. And for me, Team Hopper, you talked about being Team Matt, Team Perrin. I'm Team Hopper all the way. Oh, it was so great to see him.
It's interesting. I feel like sometimes with it's the same with Game of Thrones, right? With the wolves, they were such a big part of Game of Thrones, the books, and their inner dialogue was such a big thing. But I feel like sometimes they struggle to do that on TV shows. So I don't know if they're going to be able to get Hopper's personality the way you'd like for it to be on the TV show, and how easy it is to do if they'll show us in a dialogue, or if everything is going to be done via these senses, like how he communicated with Perrin in the book. I'm not too sure, but
and there was a mention by Elias about for the dream. We'll see her in our dreams, like when they talked about Hopper's partner, being dead. He mentioned there was a quick mention about wolf dreams, as well. That. So yeah, we shall see. We will see. It's gonna be good. I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited about next week and the episode 5. Wouldn't complain for an episode 6 just because it'd be great to see 2 new episodes, but it was just one. Happy days. It's awesome.
Yeah, we'll be back next week to talk about either episode 5 or episodes 5 and 6 if they do decide to drop more episodes. We're trying to do no more than 2 at a time if they drop multiple episodes on us. But it's been a lot of fun talking to you, Will. Please consider subscribing, hitting the like and notification bell. That way we know that you love this content. You want to see more. We're 20 subs away from hitting 2,000 subs here on the channel. So we're getting closer and closer. So please help us get there. And comment below. Let us know what you thought of everything. Are you Team Rand, Team Moraine, Team Hopper? What team are you on? Let us know in the comment section below. I do read all of them, and I will try and respond to all of them as quickly as I can. And we'll catch you guys next week. Thank you, everybody in the live. See you. Bye.
Thank you very much, guys.